And welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman, and Stephanie is here, and we have company. Happy to have with us Frederick Swan, who is, I won't just say organist here. There's a lot more to it than that. In fact, are you sure you have time to be here? You have so much going on. I'm just amazed that you can keep up with it all. But you're playing a program tomorrow night. That's Friday, 7:30, Overture Hall in Madison, and a good variety of stuff, too, from Bach right on up to Healy Whelan, the 20th century Canadian composer.
That's right. And Fred Swan, as he's agreed to let us call him, was past president of the American Guild of Organists and played at the Crystal Cathedral for 16 years, was it?
A little more than that, yes.
That must have been a very interesting gig.
It certainly was.
Can you describe for our listeners what that was like and what it looks like?
Well, the building, of course, is absolutely amazing. Many people have seen it on television, but you can't really appreciate it until you're actually in the room to sense the size of it. It has a very live acoustic. The organ is very, very large. It seats about 3,000 people.
That's the largest church organ in the world. Did I see that somewhere?
No, that's at First Congregational Los Angeles.
You also play.
Where I played when I supposedly retired from the Crystal Cathedral.
So you pretty much have a lock on those large instruments there.
Yes, all my life, my entire career, I've had nothing but large five-manual organs. So,
well, let's just hear a sample of... This is a five-manual organ that we'd be hearing in this case? Well, yes, because it's the First Congregational Church, so this is
the largest. Yes, that's actually three or four organs in one, although they are separate. It forms the largest church organ in the world.
So they're what, networked together somehow?
Yes, there are two consoles, one in the rear of the church and one in the front, and you can play the entire organ from either one.
Have you ever considered taking up a career as like a jet pilot or anything? I mean, it sounds very similar to me.
Well, when I was in the service, I took flying lessons, actually, from a pilot of a station in the South Pacific. There wasn't much to do.
Right.
And there are a lot of similarities, at least with the planes in those days, which is way back in the last century.
Are computers involved in any case with organs these days?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Really? Mm-hmm. In what way?
Well, particularly in the combination action, that's the system which allows the organist to change the stops on the organ, the sounds of the organ, as much and as often as he wants. Back in the days of Bach, you had to have human assistants, one person standing on each side of you. And then they worked it out so that there was a small mechanism, but nowadays you can have computer-type things in an organ which can give you up to 15 or 20,000 different combinations, possibilities to set.
Well, that's certainly a stunning number of things to keep track of. What's going on in this piece that we're about to hear with the First Congregational Church of Los Angeles? What kind of settings for that?
The Guy Weitz piece?
Yes.
The Grand Chorus? It begins with some of the big trumpet stops in the back of the church, and then I think, I can't remember, it's been so long since I did that, but I think then the two main organs, the one in the back and the one in the front, are played together, answering the trumpets. And it's this alternates for a minute or two, and then it begins a fugal exposition and gradually builds up to full organ.
Stand back. To spare.
Frederick Swan, our organist.
And he was playing the Grand Chorus by Guy Weitz.
He's our guest in the studio this afternoon, and he's here in Wisconsin because he'll be performing a program in Madison at Overture Hall tomorrow night, and then again a free hymn sing on Saturday morning.
Well, okay, so that was the largest church organ in the world. That's the First Congregational Church of Los Angeles organ or organ complex or exactly whatever you call it. And have you commissioned works, too, as an organist?
Yes, a few over the years. From Daniel Pinkham and...
Very well known, mm-hmm. Yes.
Jean Langlais and...
Also, yes, one of the major lights.
Right.
How is, since you were the president of the American Guild of Organists for a while...
For 6 years, until last week. Now I'm free.
The immediate past president.
Yes, that has a certain glow to it, doesn't it? Are there more organists today than there were when you started decades ago, do you think? How is it?
I think so. For a while, we had a dearth for a good many years in the 90s, 80s, and halfway through the 90s of young people going to study the organ. But through a program called Pipe Organ Encounters that the American Guild of Organists has set up around the country, where young people come for, some of them already organists, some of them just pianists who might be interested in the organ, come for a week in the summer. And over the years, we are now gradually seeing this feeding more and more students back into the study of the organ, which is very encouraging. And some of the young artists today are simply fantastic, what they're able to do.
How, as an organist, can one practice at home?
Well, of course, to be a good organ, to be a good organist, you should have a good piano background to begin with. And if you have time, you don't let the piano go. Many of us don't have time to keep up the piano technique. But, of course, nowadays, with the some of the better digital organs or very small pipe organs, there it's possible to have those in your home, and that assists you greatly in your practice.
I have a question about the interpretation of music. We look at many of these tracks of music and many recordings, and you can see that some organists might do a piece very, very quickly, and some might stretch it out for literally almost half the time more in addition to it. And how do you decide how you're going to interpret a piece of music? Is that just something very subjective? Do you take the
cue? Up to a point it is. I think it depends a great deal on the period in which the music was composed and what we know about their performance practices of the day. For instance, I started to say nobody would play Bach Prestissimo, but there have been a few people who would. And, of course, Schweitzer, great Bach authority in many ways, played everything very slowly of Bach. So... generally speaking, I think that there are guidelines which you try to adhere to, just as in the registration, the stops, the sounds that you use. Frequently, a composer will list on the music what he wants, but some organists will pull that out, those sounds out, and play whether they sound right or not. And so the organist's best defense and best weapon, if you will, are his or her ears. Unfortunately, too many organists don't listen. If it says on the music, do that, they do it. Mm. But I have always taught my students that, yes, look at what the composer says, but if it doesn't sound right on the particular organ you're playing, keep in the spirit of the law by similar things, but not the mm-hmm. actually true to the law, exactly what he says.
That makes sense.
I would think more than with almost any other instrument, mm-hmm. you would get incredible yes. variety from one organ to the next.
Oh, yes. There are no two organs anywhere in the world that are alike, even if they're identical on paper. Where they are installed in the room, the builder, there's so many things that enter into the sound of an organ in its own situation that to say there's no such thing as being able to go from one to another and have it be exactly what you want. Or what you've heard before.
And when you go to play as a guest organist, as you will this weekend, what is your process for, as you put it, getting to know the new organ?
Well, I always allow at least 2 days. If it's a very large organ, I allow more. And you first listen to every single sound in the organ individually mm-hmm. and find out what works best together. What works on one organ might not work on the next. Sometimes you have to break rules. If you use your ears, you'll find sometimes breaking a rule makes it sound better than if you go exactly according to Hoyle.
Well, speaking of the 18th century, which we were a moment ago, you have a composer like John Stanley, so would you play that, and you're playing this on the organ at St. Andrew's Cathedral in Honolulu, different kind of organ for this sort of music?
No, not really. It's a very large pipe organ built by Eulian Skinner, and it uses very light, dainty flute stops of the organ, which all organs have.
Well, let's hear it. A little piece by John Stanley, Toccata for Flutes. John Stanley wrote that, and Frederick Swan, our guest, played it in Hawaii. So it's quite the international piece from 18th century England to 21st century Hawaii.
Well, it's not quite Hawaii here. We're in Wisconsin and delighted to welcome Frederick Swan to the studios, the immediate past president of the American Guild of Organists, and quite an illustrious career. You've had the experience of playing in Westminster Abbey, as well as the cathedral in Cologne, the First Congregational Church of Los Angeles, which we all already heard today. And you were also the music director at the Riverside Church in New York City. That was one of your early posts.
Yes, for almost 30 years.
And you've been a teacher for a long time.
Yes.
Have you enjoyed that aspect of your career?
Yes, very much. I've learned a lot from my students. When I first moved to California, I didn't teach for a number of years because the job was so demanding at the Crystal Cathedral, there wasn't time. And I just started a year and a half ago to teach again at the University of Redlands in California, which at one time had one of the finest organ and church music departments in the country, but it languished and finally died about 15 years ago. So we're trying to revive it a little bit.
Well, I would think that your presence there will certainly...
Well, not necessarily, but most people want to go to the major schools that they've heard of in the East and the Midwest. Redlands, California, where is that? You know, it's a beautiful town up against the mountains, but and we have magnificent facilities and terrific organs, but it's going to take longer than I'm going to live to really get it back to where it was.
Work on that PR a little bit. In the meantime, we have a march on a theme of Handel by Alexander Guilmant, and this brings us back to that same organ in Hawaii, the organ at St. Andrew's Cathedral in Honolulu. What are the effects in this one?
It begins with a somber march on the foundation stops of the organ, and then begins very quickly and brightly, again launches into a fugue and builds up to considerable power at the end.
Just what an organ should do.
Taking us right down to our 12:30 quiz question, Frederick Swan. Well, that was Handel expanded, I guess you could say. March on a theme of Handel by Alexander Guilmant, one of the great writers of music for the organ, as of course Handel was too, and our organist, one of the great practitioners of the instrument, Frederick Swan, has been with us for this edition of the Midday. Great having you with us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
And Frederick Swann will be appearing in Madison at the Overture Center as part of the Madison Symphony Orchestra's third annual organ festival tomorrow night at 7:30 with a program that includes everything from Bach to Healy Willen. And then he returns on Saturday morning for a free community hymn sing. And the information for tickets, 608-258-4141, or you can always visit the website, madisonsymphony.org/organ.